Everyone, back to the Motion Cast. This is our episode number one. The gang is all here. Our historians, Josh and Brent, say hello, guys.
Hello, guys. And hello. Girls.
And me, the hostess with the mostest, Mandy. God. In tonight's episode, our heroes take a stroll down memory lane all the way back to the 70s to see how this all started. Then we'll bring you all back to November 1st, 1982, the release of Dawn Patrol. So let's head out to the Bay Area and live that tenderloin life.
Ooh.
Tenderloin life.
Man, that's the first I've heard it too, folks. So.
How about that?
The tenderloin life.
I don't like to use the word hero when I talk about myself a lot, but I will for that little line.
We don't need another hero.
Hey, I don't know if you guys noticed, but I'm wearing this awfully cool Night Ranger shirt. It's actually a Dawn Patrol throwback jersey. Brent, yours looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm being like a Catholic schoolboy, and I'm wearing the qualified uniform tonight.
And Josh, I notice you look good in your shirt. I mean, I make this look good, but you guys look good in your shirts.
Well, you know, I mean, here's how dedicated of a Night Ranger fan that I am is I realize the fatter I get, the bigger shirt I got to get, which means the logo's bigger. So that is...
Hey, that's how, a good way to put
that's
it,
how
Josh.
Dedicated. I am.
I'm sure Jack and the guys will appreciate that. So let's go. Is there any new Night Ranger news? Let's keep the formula going there. Anything going on that we need to know about besides this super cool podcast getting a handful of views and some comments?
Yeah, that was cool.
I don't think there's anything really new going on out there. It's, you know, as we're recording this, it's, you know, still the end of May. No new shows have been, you know, announced. Really, the best thing we got going on is the activity on some of the members' Facebook pages. Eric Levy is always uploading different clips of him jamming to just all kinds of stuff. He's really into, you know, just some real
experimental jazz or something.
Fusion sounding.
It's some crazy stuff. 172 beats per minute and stuff.
Yeah.
Eric Levy's doing a lot of stuff. Joel Hoekstra has got a lot of stuff going on his page. And, you know, Brad, you know, has got someone running his page, it looks like. But they're, you know, they're posting cool stuff every other day. So, you know, that's really all that's going on right now is just, you know, social media activity. Nothing really from, you know, Jack, you know, or Kelly. So.
Yeah, I do love, like you said, I think in the intro episode we did last week, Brad, whoever's running his social media is really throwing some great pictures out, and I'm loving them. And I love Brad's little, like Brent has his, or did our names, Brad has his name in there, and I think that's cool.
And they put it, like, in weird places, like, I don't know, I think there was a picture of, like, Huey Lewis, you know, he's with Huey Lewis and some guys, and it made it look like Huey Lewis was wearing a Brad Gillis t-shirt.
I love it. It's great.
Yeah. So yeah, or it's on a guitar strap, or it's on a coffee mug. You know, it's beautiful. It takes me too much time to do that kind of stuff. I'm not doing that.
Brent, you're going to get busy probably with people wanting their names done like that.
I have so many requests coming in, and I feel so terrible.
Yeah, I've had a few people ask me where I got mine, and I just direct them to Brent.
And it's not
I didn't tell them what I paid for.
I hope to make it possible. Because maybe if we start a Patreon, you know, do it for $100 a name. No, I'm joking.
Somebody's got to pay for it, right?
No, and the one thing I do want to say to the fans in motion out there is I'm getting a lot of Facebook requests for friendship. It's not that I'm turning you down. I'm going to be starting another Facebook page, keep my family one private versus having Facebook people, you know, and starting another big world out there. So don't think I'm ignoring you. It's nothing like that. It's just I've got to get another page started, and I haven't even thought about doing it, but I'm going to try to get on that this weekend. So,
all right, sweet. Did anybody get any new items in the mail or anything we need to talk about?
Well, it looks
want to
like,
show off?
I said it looks like we all got some T-shirts, except for maybe you, Andrew. You got yours at the show.
I actually got mine at the show up in Cleveland, which I was so freaking excited when I walked in and saw their shirts. But
well, that's one thing we could probably say that's new is Night Ranger's website finally added, you know, the Midnight Madness and Dawn Patrol t-shirts and some other stuff. And I noticed they took down all the 2020 tour stuff that they had on there. I don't know if you guys saw it, but they had stuff for the upcoming tour for sale. They've had it on sale for, you know, a few months, and all of a sudden one day it was all gone. But yeah, go to the Night Ranger, you know, the official store on their website, and they have cool retro shirts, and like I said, the shirts that we're all wearing. And you know, spend some of your money,
stimulus money,
yeah,
unemployment check money. I wonder if they'll ever find a way to sell that 2020 merch. I mean, well, I'd buy it.
I don't know if it. Well, Night. I've always been convinced.
Let's ask Eric.
Night Ranger doesn't like money.
Yeah, they don't follow the Gene Simmons formula.
Because if they did, they would have these retro shirts all the time on the site, you know, with different variations, and they would sell the necklaces all the time. You know, when they released the vinyl, you know, for their last few albums, they've ran 500 copies.
Yeah.
And they've sold out quick. So it's just like, run another 500 copies, make it a different color vinyl, and guess what? Those 500 copies are going to sell out quick too. And they just, like I said, I don't think they
Well, that's Frontiers doing that, you know?
Well, I mean, if I was the manager of the band, I'm like, hey, you know, let's do this. Or, you know, if you're going to do that, write that into your contract that we own, you know, something of the masters, you know, to release vinyl-wise or something. I mean, I don't know. I mean, but Night Ranger owns the logo and they own the tour. You know, they can do the shirts and stuff. So it's not all just a record label. But anyways, go to their website, buy some stuff.
Definitely. All right. Is there anything we want to discuss regarding the Facebook page and the group at this time before we start this trek that's going to get us from Jack and Fitz all the way to Dawn Patrol?
Well, Andy, before we get into that, I know you're getting ready to leave. If you by chance ever do get to go to Kansas City, I know you're not going there, but there's a group out of there calls themselves Four Jacks and a Jill. They've been like at a Ramada in there for about 18 months. If you want to hear some good music, you might want to drop on by there.
Sweet.
All right.
Yeah, they are pretty sweet. I think I got that from I had a guy from the Air Force, I think, tell me about that.
What time we go on? 18:30. That's like 2 days from now, right?
Yeah.
I'm a big fan, not really of yours, just the genre in particular.
Sure.
But yeah, a little
homage to Fred Willard there.
As we're recording this, we released the first like episode zero podcast last night. And again, it's just us doing our best, you know, getting this recorded and getting it out there. And we had a lot of positive comments. You know, there's Lisa was giving us some, you know, some good comments, and Dwayne Vickers, Emily Medler, Mark Greenway, Bethany, Robbie Swink,
yep.
Barb Harrington. Thanks for the good, for the great comments. We appreciate it. I'm sure if I missed anyone, there's some other post I may have missed. I was just reading off the one. Thank you as well. Like I said, we're just doing this because we're fans, and we to show off some of our stuff we've collected, and just basically, you know, a reason to get away from our families.
It's our reason to be, so to speak.
Oh, I knew that was coming.
Thank you. I'll be here all night. I will, actually. I'll be sitting here all night.
I liked Lisa's comment the best. The psych gif. I said that was the biggest compliment anybody could give us, you know.
It is surprising, you know. I didn't know what to expect. I think I was talking to Brent earlier, and I think when I was talking to you, he said that we're up to 95 views, and I said that's 90 more than I thought we would get. So I'm pretty happy, man. It's cool, you know, that the fans are
half of them watching. Are Brent's mom, so we got 40.
Hey, Sheila,
my mom joined the page.
Sheila's great, man.
She sent me a friend request.
Did she really?
No.
You're lying. Yeah, she's not that savvy.
Well, you know what?
She is.
Hold on. Quiet down. Let me look into the camera here. Sheila, if you're listening, send me a friend request.
Yeah. Do a topless mom, make me proud.
Oh my God.
All right.
I'm going to bring this back. What I was going to add, what's really weird is it was really hard watching myself. I don't watch myself very often. These guys, it's easy looking at them. Well, now, when I say easy, they're only this big on my screen. So
I'm that big in real life, Brent.
Yeah, he really is. But no, it's I thought the show flowed very well for us never doing this before. I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts, Decibel Geeks and you know what have you, and I think I've learned a lot from those people, but I've still never done it. So I only hope to get better. I'm gonna try to get better. For God's sakes, people, I'm gonna try.
I want us to get so good that we get sued by Night Ranger.
Ooh, I don't want that.
Oh, what the hell?
It'd be fun. At least get to meet them.
Hey, we will. We will get the Fans in Motion legal team on the ball if that happens.
Yeah. Lionel Hutz died. Huh? Lionel Hutz died. He was, you know.
I was going to try to do an impersonation, but I can't. I can't do a Lionel Hutz.
Yeah.
What else we got?
I don't know. Is that about it for now? I mean,
Well, thank you, everybody.
Yeah, thanks. Stay tuned.
Yep.
It gets better. It will get better.
Yeah, and let us, like I said, if there's a topic you know, I've had a few people suggest topics, suggest them to us because how we're going to, I guess I was going to do this at the end, I'll do it now, though, is we're going to do, like, this episode, Dawn Patrol. Next week, it's going to be a topic we don't know yet, but it's just going to be a topic not pertaining to an album. And then we're going to do the following week, we're going to do Midnight Madness. And then the following week after that, something else. Then after that, Seven Wishes. So we're going to go in order through all the albums, but in between them, we're going to discuss, you know, just all kinds of stuff, favorite, you know, set list, live set, you know, favorite songs, you know, Brent, I know, is a big fan of Jack Blades' fashion, and, you know, he can tell you exactly what blue blazer he wore in 85 and stuff, and so.
Damn right. You know. For some of you, I already posted it, you saw it, but so, there's more to the story that I may or may not tell.
Hey, I may or may not have wore a bandana around my thigh, and I didn't do it because of Chachi, you know?
Hey, you know what, and that's what's crazy is every, you know, you got to think about it too, is think about, hey, anyone, take your picture of yourself in 1985 and how a little bit embarrassing it is. And then think about being them or any other celebrity and you had a camera in front of you almost every day and it's out there for the world to see. You know, it's just, it's got to be, you know.
Yeah. Oh, my ass would be all over the internet. Literally, my ass would be.
Listen,
I'd be mooning everybody.
Josh, I'm sure you saw I posted that Rubicon video.
Yep.
If anybody takes the time to watch that, Jack and Brad had some pretty sweet satiny bell-bottomy pants on that I'm sure if they could go back in time, they'd be like, oh, my God. And Jack used to wear those big glasses. I mean,
hey, those glasses were cool. They're still cool.
I don't know about that, but I'll accept. All right.
His little hat. I call him Martin Briley.
But the Brad's pictures have aged a little bit better than Jack's on the album covers and stuff. And I met them. It was 2009 or 10, and I had a Rubicon album with me. And Brad flipped it over, and he was telling me a little bit about the guys in the band. And this was right before Facebook had gotten really big to where you could really find people and get histories and YouTube had really taken off. And he to me, pointed to Jack. And I'm not going to repeat what he said, but he made fun of him right there.
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
And I'm sure he's done it to his face as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jack was, so, you know, right next to him. But,
yeah.
But, yeah, so it's it's definitely fun, you know, watching those videos. And that's what's great about YouTube is, you know, people don't remember. Some of us do, but younger people don't know how you would. I mean, finding a Rubicon album would be something you might search years for. And now I could go on my phone and have one mailed to me and, you know, a week.
Love it. All right, Josh, you ready to get this thing rolling? You want to take us back as far as you can on with the origins of how these guys all somehow got together and over the course of the different bands and got to become what we know as Night Ranger?
Well, there's a lot of ways you could start it. You know, they're all mostly California, you know, California guys. I'll start, and I'm just going to go with the musical history. I'm not really going into their history. And unless they have private recordings, and that's one thing about this, you know, us doing this video or this podcast is I've started digging into my collection. I think we were actually on a trial, you know, recording when I pulled a Rubicon test pressing out. And I was like, heck, I didn't even remember I had this. Well, I found another one today getting ready for this episode. Boy. My collection's in a few different places. And someone had posted, I'm sorry, I forget your name, the Palms 150 album with Jack Blades. And I was like, I know that he's not like pictured on that. Like I'd seen it, but I thought maybe it was a picture I'd seen. I couldn't remember. But actually, Brent, when you posted what you said was the dust jacket, that sparked something. Like, you know what? I've had that in my hand. So, but it wasn't a dust jacket. That's what I'm like, I've seen that and it wasn't a dust jacket. So anyways, I got into another box, started digging, and we come up with this here.
Yeah, that was the album.
Yep. All right, so this is 1974. It's a Christian, you know, rock band. They had a pretty good following in California. Jack is in some of the promotional photos. From what I hear, this record was actually nominated for a Grammy.
Wow.
But as of how much Jack is on here is a little bit, I guess, maybe of a mystery. He is not on the cover. And that dust jacket, Brett, is actually the gatefold.
Okay.
All right.
It looked like a dust jacket on...
No, I would
I found it on Discogs, a picture.
I would have thought the same thing probably by the picture, but like I said, so that's how I kind of remember, you know, it's like, I don't think that's Jack because of the members here. Jack's not listed. There's a different bass player. But if you look, let's go right here, and I'll try to get photos in there or not. But if you look in there somewhere, it says additional musicians, Jack Blades bass. So his name is on there. It's just under additional musicians. And also, if you look right here, and I'm going to try to get my finger there. You should be able to see Jack Blades' name. He wrote a song on here called, I'm not sure what the title is, The Light, maybe. I don't think he sings it. It'd been a while since I had listened to this. I had listened to it when I first got it and hadn't listened to it since. I threw it on today just for the podcast. I'll read you some lyrics. Take me along and Jesus help me through this evil day that fell on me. Guide my hand, cause my eyes, because my eyes just want to see the light, the light. It's a Christian rock band. Jack Blades is writing Christian songs. And
a little pre-Striper.
And it sounds musically a lot like, a little bit like Rubicon. You know, a little funky and stuff. There is a recording on, I think, YouTube I found. I'm not sure, though, if Jack is actually on that or not. So you got Jack, 1974. All right. So this actually is a catalyst because The main guy in this band is Greg Eckler. Greg Eckler is your drummer in Rubicon. All right. So that is from what I've seen is one connection of how they got, he suggested that Jack audition. I don't know if it was for Rubicon or if Greg was working with Sly and the Family Stone at that time. Because I know Jack worked with Sly and the Same Family Stone. I don't know if Jerry Martini was still there or that not. That's a little bit muddled, and you know, I don't know yet, but I have heard that Greg is the one who suggested Jack audition. So that would come from that band. And then really at the same time, you have, and a lot of people don't know this, but you know, Alan Fitzgerald Fitz was a seasoned rock veteran by the time he joined Night Ranger. He was the first Montrose album, but he did join Montrose for their second album, Paper Money. I think there's a picture of him in the dust jacket, but you guys get a chance to take a look at that. He was on this, that was the first album he's on. And then he's on Warner Brothers Presents. I think this is the one. I may have a picture of him. So he is right there in the center.
There he is.
Yeah, he's on the back of the other one playing bass.
Nope, that's probably the back of this one.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So
no, that's not the one I remember seeing. It was another one.
Well, he may be on that Paper Money one.
Yeah.
And eventually we're going to do episodes where we dig deep into the vinyl and stuff, and I'll, you know, go more into these and stuff. That's a promo copy, by the way.
So, Josh, what's the time frame of those albums? If Jack is 74.
Well, so this is going to, these albums are going to run in correlation with Rubicon eventually. Paper Money is 75, or no, this is 75 here.
So about the same time. Is that what you think, Brent?
That's
or
got,
no?
That one's got 20 foot.
So this,
that one has 20 Flight Rock on it. That's a great song.
This is 74. So these are actually a little bit earlier than I thought. So this is 74. So he's already, you know, an established musician right here with this album. I mean, they're touring right off of, you know, Rock Candy and Bad Motor Scooter off the first album. This is 75. And I don't have everything, but during the mid to late 70s, he's also playing on some Sammy Hagar albums. But he sticks he sticks with Ronnie Montrose. Ronnie Montrose then does a solo type album, Open Fire. I don't know if he's on the, I think it's just Ronnie there, but he's on this. This album is 78, so this would correlate with the first Rubicon album. And I'll leave this one for a little bit. So now you got, you know, Fitz. He's 74, 75, 76, 77, 78. He's with Ronnie Montrose. He is also playing some stuff with Sammy Hagar solo. So he's on tour. He's got, you know, a good, you know, career going.
Yeah, he's like a pro musician, a touring musician.
Then you got, you know, if you're following the career of Jack and Brad, and they meet up with Rubicon, which Rubicon was formed by Jerry Martini, who was horn player with Sly and the Family Stone. If you don't know much about Sly and the Family Stone, dig into him. It's a really neat history, him getting married at Madison Square Garden and all that cool stuff. And, you know, some good music, too. And really, you know, groundbreaking. You know, you had this band, you know, if you, you know, like the 60s, a lot of racial tensions, but you had this band, black, white, all together, and very groundbreaking stuff. So Sly and the Family Stone kind of run their course. Jerry Martini does something different. They were trying to bridge this, I don't know, funk, horns, rock and roll, and make it all together. We got a test pressing. of the first Rubicon album. Another test pressing of the second Rubicon album. Those test pressings would basically be for if I got two plates that I'm going to make a record and I'm about ready to shove 100 records or 1,000 records through there, I take one, test it, I go listen to it, make sure the plates are good, there's no errors in the plates, and then you run the other 1,000 through. So with Rubicon, this is their first album, 20th Century Records. You got the young-looking Brad Gillis there.
Oh, yeah.
And you got a... That's Jim Pugh.
Yeah.
You got Jack Blades right there. So they...
He's sporting some Christy McNichol-looking hair, if I can pull a deep cut there. So, Josh, real quick, can you... How do... Jack and Brad, do they meet in Rubicon, or do they know each other going into Rubicon?
As far as I know, they met in Rubicon.
Okay.
And by the way, Thomas Holtbrand's the one that brought up the Psalms album. You were talking about the guy's name, and I had it, and I just found it, so wanted to give him a shout-out.
Good
so.
Call, Brent.
Thank you.
And so Rubicon does his first album. They actually have a top 40 hit written by one of their one of the horn players, Max Haskett, who was in, I can't remember the band that he was in. It was a bigger band from the California area. But those guys, I mean, they had very great musicians in that band. I mean, actually, probably Jack and Brad were the least, you know, experienced at that time. You know, I mean, Jack did have some time with Sly and the Family Stone. But so you got, you know, Rubicon... Their first album, and probably the highlight of their career, is Cow Jam 2. I think it was 1978.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to let you go because I have a question about that show.
Do what?
I have a question about that show.
Well, I'll talk about who's on the show. There was everybody: Aerosmith, Ted Nugent. Aerosmith, Ted Nugent, Mahogany Rush, Hart, Dave Mason, Santana. Wow. And what's the question?
Does it show the crowd? Show the on the back?
It shows...
Looks like a cartoon or something of it.
I mean, it shows just a little bit of it.
Okay, so there's probably 100,000 people there, 75,000. I had heard, and I don't know if this is factual, that was Jack Blades' first show. Or was it his first big show? That's what it was.
I don't think it was their first show.
You mean with Rubicon?
With Rubicon. No.
Or first ever. Because I mean,
I think it was his first big show.
Well,
is what it was.
It may have been their first, like, you know, because I mean,
well, I don't know.
They weren't
not the band, but him, you know.
I don't know how big you think Merv Griffin is, but they played the Merv Griffin show, so.
Merv Griffin was pretty damn big. I mean,
I'm just saying.
Kramer even took the set out of the trash.
They saying back in the day.
They weren't headliners, so I mean they weren't playing arenas unless they opened for groups, which I don't know. I've read where people have made comments that hey, Rubicon played my high school or they played, you know, here. So, but yeah, I mean this is a new band and all of a sudden they're playing Cow Jam 2. And what's crazy is they actually headlined the second night. So they go on after all those bands. They're the last band of the night. And the reason why is, you know, there's a huge crowd. And the promoters just figured we'll put this lesser band on at the end of the night. People will slowly start to trickle out instead of everybody waiting till the end of Aerosmith, let's say. And then everybody leaving at once. So Rubicon was the last band of the second night. So they basically headlined that night. But, you know, it was more for people to gradually leave than to all leave at one time. And they did get a second album. Same lineup. American Dreams. I have no idea what that is on a cover of Tiger or something like that. I don't know. And Jack is looking pretty dreamy there, Brent.
There's those badass glasses, man. Yeah. Looks like Santana standing behind him.
There's Jack.
You have a nice tent, man.
And Santana, man.
You have a nice tent.
Where the heck's Brad? There's Brad right there. So
yeah.
And, the albums aren't horrible. You got to like... But you want to hear the best playing Jack's ever done, on record. You're probably going to... You're going to get
funky.
A lot of slap bass. These are the records you want to get. So Rubicon releases that second album in 79. The band doesn't take off. Like I said, they had a top 40 hit off their first album. The second album didn't do much. So, so now Rubicon breaks up. And you have Jack. Well, before that, while Rubicon is together, Greg Eckler, the drummer, who was the guy in Palms 150, leaves Rubicon and is replaced by the one and only Kelly Kagi. So Kelly Kagi is a member of Rubicon towards the very end. He's not on any of the studio stuff. There's really only one photo I know of that shows him with the band. It's not a very good photo to begin with. So Rubicon breaks up, and Jack, Brad, and Kelly, and Jerry Martini, and Jim Pugh, who was in Rubicon as well, the keyboard player, those five guys form Stereo. Stereo was never Jeff Watson or Alan Fitzgerald. Stereo is basically five guys from Rubicon. They're playing new wave kind of stuff. There's not a lot of information out there. That is Stereo, and I make notes. I probably should read them here.
Did they record anything?
Demos, I think, exist, or at least at one time did. Nothing to the public, though. But I've actually asked them directly who was in Stereo. They've ran that lineup before, and there's other interviews where they talk about it as well. But the first gig that I can find that Stereo ever did was November 17th, 1979. So that was at the Palms in San Francisco. So by the end of 79, you got Jim Pugh, Jerry Martini, which is crazy because it's basically Night Ranger, but instead of Jeff Watson, you have a horn player. So they do this for a year. In September of 80, almost a year later, they're still playing a Stereo, all right? Now, at this time, Jack Blades is roommates with Alan Fitzgerald. Now, Alan Fitzgerald has joined a new Ronnie Montrose band called Gamma. So that has Fitz on there as well. I don't know if there's a... Yeah, there's a little picture of Fitz right here. Right there in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
All right. And at this time, this is 1980, that's released. So Fitz and Jack Blades are roommates. Jack is in Stereo. Fitz is in Gamma. September 12th and 13th of 1980, Stereo opens for Gamma. Eventually, Jack and them, I think, decide, hey, this isn't working. And Fitz is like, why don't we basically create a rock band? There's a guitarist that I know named Jeff Watson. So Jeff Watson had been playing in a band just called the Jeff Watson Band. And, he kind of made a name for himself. I think Eric Martin of Mr. Big had been the singer of his band for a while. And Fitz had told Jeff, if I ever do a rock thing, I want you to be the guitarist. So when stereo was basically probably not going anywhere, Jack, Kelly, and Brad form up with Fitz. Fitz brings in Jeff, and now you have Ranger. So Ranger plays their first show that I can find, opening for Sammy Hagar, October 30th, 1980. That is, again, these dates could be wrong. I mean, this is as best as I can get. September 13th, 1980, Stereo's opening for Gamma. A month and, 5 weeks later, they're opening for Sammy Hagar. Was there some overlap? Was Fitz not in Gamma at that time? I don't know. That would be someone we'd have to go check out the Gamma podcast, I guess. But October 30th, 1980, that's the first Ranger show, and they followed Sammy Hagar. They were real close with Bill Graham out there in San Francisco. The guys were this is a
Yeah.
Sammy Hagar ticket. And when I bought it, I probably wouldn't have known much about it, but the guy I was buying it off of said that he saw Sammy, or he saw Night Ranger open for Sammy Hagar with that ticket. And it turns out this was probably the fourth show
Wow.
that they
That's
did.
really cool.
So now we're up to the formation of Ranger. Am I missing anything, do you guys think, up to this point?
No, I don't. You're the historian, Brett. You might know a little more about that than me.
No, I got nothing to add. I'm just sitting back. I'm taking my lesson right now
enjoying the
because you
history
say I'm an
lesson.
expert. I am not an expert
And
by
I
no
called you
means.
guys historians today. I
I
dropped
know
the
more about
experts
Night Ranger.
after.
I mean, I know Rubicon and I know some of the Gamma stuff, and but I find it's really cool that Sammy was the lead singer for the first Montrose album. He leaves, Fitz comes in.
Yeah.
Fitz leaves Gamma, Ronnie Montrose, and now he's opening for Sammy Hagar. I think that's pretty cool,
I do love the long-running history of Night Ranger and Sammy, which I mean they've been playing together for
Well, sure.
40 years.
And Jeff, the Jeff Watson band, I can't remember. I used to know some of it, but they had a history with Sammy Hagar as well. I mean, Jeff, if you guys remember on Jeff's solo album from 1992, Sammy Hagar does vocal scats on the first track. So they've been friends for forever. And Gary Phil, I'm just kind of jumping a little bit ahead here.
Oh, Gary Peel?
Is that what is it?
Yeah, Gary Peel.
He is the guitar player for Sammy Hagar, or was at that time. He's the guitar player for Boston now. From what I hear is those guys basically lived at his house and recorded basically all their demos there. So there was a tight connection between Sammy Hagar and the band. And like I said, their first four or five shows they opened for Sammy. Here's some other dates. May 22nd, 1981, they're still Ranger, and they open for Judas Priest. That's the show that's on YouTube.
Is that the one you sent me, Brent?
It's black and white.
Yeah, the black and white. Bill Graham filmed it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So Night Ranger, they took a different approach. They were concentrating all their time on rehearsing and creating demos, not playing live. So a lot different. A lot different, setup than some bands. So they don't have a lot of live dates. I'll go back to that May 22nd, 1981 show. Another show that kind of stood out, July 8th, 1981, they opened for Motorhead. There was a couple of
Wow.
shows in August of 1981 where they opened for YNT. And
Cool shirt, by the way. Going back to the last podcast, whatever.
Well,
Cool.
I don't think I wore it for actual one. I love
No,
Y.
no.
Y.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Y and
Go
T.
ahead.
So if you never listen to Y and T, go hang after you watch this, go
Yeah.
listen to Mean Street.
Watch this first.
Yep, and then find
Yeah,
Mean
it's
Street.
another Bay Area band, by the
Yep,
way, right?
yep.
See, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
They're all tight with Eric Martin and all that. That's all, you know, Journey.
And so I'll talk a little bit about the May 22nd, 1981 show. That's the one that's in black and white. It's really the only recorded video, I think, it's out there of Ranger. And they call themselves Ranger at the end of the show. They, you know, walk off and, hey, we're Ranger or whatever. The video starts at the end of a song that's unknown. I don't know the name of it, but it's a song that was never on Dawn Patrol. Then there's a song called Diary of a Madman, which is before the whole Ozzy stuff. All right?
Yeah. Blew me away.
Yep. So Diary of a Madman, which I think that's a song. They never mentioned it in the title in the interview or whatever I saw, but I saw something or read something where they joke about Brad at soundcheck and he'll crack open an old riff from one of these songs they had on their demo, you know, a demo. And I think it's the Diary of the Madman riff. And there's a couple guitar solos and then another song that never made it onto Dawn Patrol called Life of My Own. And then Can't Find Me to Thrill, and then Eddie Coming Out Tonight. And those songs are pretty much the same. You know, there's a few. They're not as refined as you would have on the album or after they've been playing them for a while. So there's that video out there. Go out and find it. All the way up to November 1st of 82, and they're still kind of headlining themselves as Ranger. So during this whole year of 1981.
Hang on, your date was wrong there. You said November 1st of 82?
Well, that is, they're still Ranger up to that point. Or no, sorry, January 1st of 82. They're still Ranger. I'm trying to find, where did it become Ranger? Where did it become Night Ranger?
Well, wasn't that right when they went to pressing, right?
Well, there's, you know.
That's the story.
That's the story. So I've tried to find dates and stuff. So, I'm also trying to find when did they record this album, too. So, Randy Rhoads dies March 19th, 1982. So, March of 82. Now, during this time, to make money, Brad and I think Kelly, too, were in a band called the Alameda All-Stars. Basically, just playing, you know, covers to make money while Night Ranger did rehearsals and stuff. And I can't think of the name now, but a musician saw him and basically saw Brad playing some Ozzy Osbourne and said, hey, I think I can get you an audition. Long story short, he gets the audition for Ozzy, and he starts performing with Ozzy. Randy Rhoads dies March 19th, 1982. Brad's first show, and he was on the road with him for a little bit, because Brad didn't immediately replace Randy Rhoads. Bernie Torme actually played a few gigs in between. And May 13th, 1982 in Binghamton, New York is actually Brad's first show. So Brad plays, you know, with Ozzy a lot in 1982. And there's some breaks and stuff, so I just don't know when they're recording that Night Ranger album. If it's already in the can, I don't know. Or if they're, you know, recording it in you know, different sections. And if you guys want to, you know, I think, Andy, we had talked about the Rudy Sarzo book.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Off the Rails. It doesn't really cover, I mean, it talks about Brad, but it doesn't talk about what they're doing in the meantime and how much time they got off.
I was going to say, the only thing I can think of, and I don't know the timeline of it, but Rudy is telling the story of when the tour ended. So we'd have to see when that tour ended. They were both on the plane flying back to LA, I'm assuming. And I think Rudy, and I'd have to go get the book to read it, but to paraphrase it is, he says something to Brad, or Brad says something to Rudy, like, are you, you know, I don't think I'm going to come back. And Rudy's like, yeah, he goes, and he hands him like a Walkman or a cassette deck and says, you know, this is what I'm going back to. This is what I'm working on.
Which is quite right.
Yeah, and then Brad hands him Dawn Patrol. Mm-hmm. And they both, I mean, it's amazing because Rudy hands him Metal Health. And, yeah. You know, so you have to assume that it was recorded Or at least demoed.
Well, I think the.
But when did Ozzy's tour end?
Well, what was the release date of Dawn Patrol?
Dawn Patrol.
November.
No. Yeah. So Dawn Patrol, I'd have to read my.
November 1st of '82.
Correct.
Okay, November 1st.
But here's the thing: is Brad's last show with Ozzy, I think, is December 20th, 1982. And it's not with Rudy Sarzo. He does a European tour with Pete Way on bass from UFO.
And Fast Away.
Yep. So.
Say what you will.
So, Ozzy, I mean, he's still with Ozzy when Dawn Patrol is released. And there's an interview out there where Kelly and Jax went and saw Brad with Ozzy. And they talk about how big and everything, you know, the show is. And he's not coming back.
I saw that interview.
You know, he's not coming back. So, Brad is having a great, you know, a great November, because November 1st of 82, Dawn Patrol is released. Speak of the Devil, the Ozzy Osbourne album with, you know, all the Black Sabbath live covers, is released November 27th. So, you know, he's got two big albums coming out that month. So, he continues to play with Ozzy, fulfills that agreement December 20th, 1982, in Liverpool, England. Again, Dawn Patrol is released November 1st, 1982. Here's another thing. We'll focus on it. The album's released November 1st, 1982. The last show that I can see that's played as Ranger is January 1st of 82. No live shows, really, all of 82 until the very end of 82. So, when does Night Ranger become Ranger? And there's that whole, well, we printed 10,000 copies of Dawn Patrol with the word Ranger on it. And then I've heard someone say something about stickers. I'll let you guys chime in on that, and I'll give you my opinion.
I've heard the story, the same thing that I'm sure you've heard. Brent, have you ever seen one?
I've been collecting records, in fact.
I mean, I'd love to have one.
That's Dawn Patrol on Boardwalk Records, still sealed. And I bought mine. I mean, so, if I went...
Hold that up for a second, Brent.
If I went to see them in concert in January and I bought my album in November, I bought one of the first, you know.
Yeah. So are we assuming... Was the Ranger logo...
Supposedly it was exactly like this without the night.
Just
on
the had
top.
The night. So are we assuming, if you're looking at your cover, that's what it would have looked like minus the night?
Yeah.
Move it to your. There you
I'm
go.
Trying. I know that.
Yeah. Yeah. No. No. So I just never
the glare.
I never did the math on where the.
There you go.
How the logo would have looked. Okay. So, but yeah, we saw them in January of '83.
Yeah. So I had that album in November. I probably bought it a week or two after it came out, or maybe the week of. I don't recall. I can't go back in the Wayback Machine to find out. But I've never seen a copy in all of my younger roving days of record collecting. I've not seen... I mean, I'd heard about...
Odd, that one.
Thank you. I had heard about something that existed, possibly, but every time I've ever heard about it, it's always been from Jack. I've never...
So in all the record magazines that you guys have looked at, Brent, you've been to record shows. Josh, I assume you've been to plenty of record shows and Discogs and all these things you talk about. There's just never a mention of it. There's no actual photo of it.
Anything that I've ever come across.
And there's no way they recalled them, right? There's no way they were sent and came back.
No, they could have trashed them at the plant. I mean, they could have. I doubt it.
But didn't somebody
Neil Bogart wasn't the most...
Well, but Josh, didn't you even talk? We were talking in pre-production stuff before all this.
I like that pre-production.
You like that? Oh, we're professional. You're in the studio. Yeah,
that's when he had the Hawaiian T-shirt on, by the way. Pre-production.
Right. But weren't you talking about something? Somebody always sneaks something out whenever they trash things.
There's
no rule about it, but you can assume somebody would have grabbed a couple of those, wouldn't you?
To make it simple, one of two things happened. All right, they printed 10,000 copies. And every single copy got destroyed. Or they never printed them. I think it's never got printed. Because
just a good story.
In 40, almost 40 years, something, one of them would have popped up. One of them. So.
I hate Brent sometimes. Well, that's the thing. Like, I would love to see one of these.
Well, you know.
I can make one.
You know, it's a unicorn. It doesn't exist.
What I'll do is, after this episode comes out, I'll post the logo without the knight on there. You know.
Just gonna post, just gonna post Walter.
Make sure you put some. No. Make sure you put some type of watermark over the logo before that gets out as a legitimate copy or something.
Well, anybody could do it, you know. Anybody could just take the top off.
I mean, that could get a suit if you want.
But
no, just saying. This is. I'm not gonna make the album cover. I'm just gonna make the logo. Saying this is what it would have looked like. You know,
but I don't, like I said, I don't think it existed. And for those who don't know, you know, they were called Ranger. They had a song called Night Ranger on the record. And we'll talk more about the song or the meaning behind the song Night Ranger when we talk about the Feeding Off the Mojo album. But a little teaser. Yeah. But so you have the song Night Ranger. There's a country band that's been around forever called Ranger. There's this whole, you know, legal thing of.
What are they called? I thought they were the Rangers or Rangers.
I don't know.
With an S.
But so anyways, they decided, well, we got a song called Night Ranger. Let's add, you know, night to the name. And that's what they did. And there you have Night Ranger Dawn Patrol, released November 1st, 1982. It is their first show is December 29th, 1982. So Brad gets off the road with Ozzy December 20th, and they're playing Portland, Oregon, December 29th, 1982. And then they hop on tour with these guys.
Oh, you have that copy of it, huh?
You wanted the best.
I got both.
I have the.
I got both copies, but I don't need both copies. I need to sell one. But, so from the Kiss Touring Bible, Kiss jumps on tour with, or Night Ranger jumps on tour with Kiss January 6th, 1983.
Wait a minute. January 6th, right?
Yep, 1983. Lexington, Kentucky. Rupp Arena.
Brent, when do we see him?
You guys see them January 9th. So the 6th, they play Lexington. The 7th, they play Saginaw, Michigan. Always a hotbed for rock and roll.
Look at that.
Toledo, January.
Take it down, Brent. Right there.
Is it
yeah,
visible?
That's our stub.
January 9th, 1983.
Mint looking, too.
So why don't you guys tell them a little bit about January 9th, 1983. Just they got the whole story of the last episode, so
yeah.
Tell them a little bit, just though, what.
Go ahead, Brent. You're a better storyteller than I am. I just have the.
The clouds opened up and the second coming of Christ came.
I heard the crickets were coming.
I just remember being in eighth grade. It was a Sunday night. Never forget, it was a Sunday night, and it was raining, and it was cold. And
yeah.
And we get there, and it's our second concert we've ever been to. Our first one was Loverboy in Point Blank on August 22nd, 1982. That date will forever be in my brain.
An infamy.
It was important to me. That's why. But, you know, I always wanted Kiss to be my first concert, but I knew Point Blank, Old Nicole was the only song I knew by that opening band. But this opening band, I knew every single song on the album. So I really had some meat in the game, so to speak. I couldn't wait. I didn't know how to act at concerts. I remember the dude trying to smoke a joint, and he burned his fingers in front of us, and your dad started cracking up. And but no, it was just fantastic. I just remember seeing them, and it was like seeing. I mean, Loverboy is a great band. Mike Reno is one of the best vocalists to ever sing on a record, but they're not as explosive as Night Ranger. The previous two bands we had seen were not as explosive as Night Ranger. And in fact, I had already, when I was a kid, I thought Brad Gillis I didn't know any history of Night Ranger. I'd already seen over the summer, whether it was Binghamton, New York. I don't know where that show was filmed with Ozzy, but MTV ran it on one of their MTV concerts, and I was an Ozzy fan, and I couldn't wait to see who the new guitarist was, and it was this Brad Gillis guy. So the first time I saw the video, I'm like, oh, my God, that's Ozzy's guitar player.
Yeah.
Never forget that. Well, actually, it was Night Ranger's guitar player.
Yeah, really.
But like I said, they came out. You and I were both dumbfounded by why the drum set was on the front of the stage, facing the stage, the right side. Couldn't figure out why that was, other than he was a lead singer, and like I said, we thought the turn was so big that they couldn't put the drum set behind him.
Yep.
You know, and you look at the Don't Tell Me You Love Me video, and he's turned sideways on that, too. So, you know.
Well, and just to add to that, you know, two other friends of ours from our school were there also, Kevin Hayes and Steve Cook, who I would later go on to form a lifelong friendship with both of these guys. And they also are huge KISS fans and Night Ranger fans.
We were the only four KISS fans in school still.
Yeah, so wearing our KISS shirts and people are making fun of us. It just started something that, you know, you can't explain it. Just a wonderful journey of music and friendship and everything. And it all ties back to these bands, whether it's KISS or Loverboy or Night Ranger. It's just the greatest thing. And I also I did want to gloss
That's
over, Josh, you
stuff, by the way.
You had mentioned Brad's last show was December 20th with Ozzy, right?
Correct.
Peter Criss's birthday. Just saying.
I was wondering if you're going to pick that up.
I've been waiting just to throw it in there. I mean, being a drummer, he was the reason I started playing drums, and I will always be grateful to him for that.
So you got.
And I wanted to be a singing more like Kelly. I can't sing, so.
I mean, how many dates did Night Ranger play with KISS in the book? I was going to look that up, and I didn't have time because I was at a graduation party, a parking lot graduation, folks. That's the time we're living in.
Yeah.
Sat in the parking lot for an hour to get up to the kids' the door so they could get the diploma and get back in the car.
So you
and I didn't have time to look this up.
Shut the hell up, and I'll tell you guys. All right, so You guys were actually lucky to see Night Ranger because they were only on those four dates, January 6th to January 9th, okay? Then, beginning January 12th, they're in Canada, and they are no longer the opening act. They come back on tour, though.
Yeah, they came back. Knew they came back. I think they only came back for a handful of dates there, too.
Well, they were a little bit longer. January 16th, they start opening for them, and they play a couple dates, three or four dates in New York. They're in Maine, Massachusetts, Norfolk, Virginia, Alabama, Chattanooga, Nashville, Tennessee, and January 30th, 83, Nashville, Tennessee was their last date with them. So they're on the road with them from January 16th to January 30th.
Another 2 weeks in.
That's, you know, it's not a bad tour to jump onto as your first national tour, you know, promoting your debut album.
Well, I want to say I do consider us very lucky to see that tour, Brent, because we have seen Night Ranger on every tour, but had we not seen that, we would have never seen him on Dawn Patrol. I don't know.
No way.
Because I don't know if they ever came through Cincinnati.
Well, let me tell you. Let me break your guys' hearts. Can I break your guys' hearts?
Please don't.
So you guys saw him.
La 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 la.
You guys saw him January 9th, right?
Yes.
I already know this. Go ahead. You're not gonna break my heart.
Well, then you're not a true Night Ranger fan. Take that shirt off. Off screen. The next night.
Go ahead.
The next
dare me.
The next night, they play Bogarts.
Yeah.
Oh, what?
Mm-hmm. We were too young to get in. You know, we were too young. We wouldn't have been able to do it.
Bogarts is.
But yeah, I knew that.
Both those Yahoos are from Cincinnati, and Bogarts is a small club there on campus.
Wow. Yeah. I never knew that, Josh. That would have been amazing.
So, now, I see. The thing is, I told you, you just don't remember.
Who are you again?
Yeah, I know.
And the album, and here's the thing that hurt them, too, on their initial album is Boardwalk basically folds during this whole, right after the album is pressed. So Boardwalk was somewhat of a new label. It was created by Neil Bogart, who was the basically one of the founders of Casablanca Records, Kiss, Donna Summer, all that good stuff. And then he forms Boardwalk Records. They have a lot of artists on there. Some Harry Chapin stuff was released on there, Joan Jett. But then it folds. So Night Ranger, their debut album, they're out promoting it, and it gets to a point where I don't think people could actually find it there for a while. It peaks at 38, which is not bad for the time period, 1982-1983, and for the fact that it's on, you know, Boardwalk Records and they have those issues. The tour last, the last like Dawn Patrol tour that I could see was September 21st of 83. That's kind of considered the final tour or date of that album. So they play, you know, all the way up through September. And I don't know how reliable it is. It looks like they were playing some Sister Christian before Midnight Madness came out. There is a, I don't know if I wrote it down or not, but September 25th of 83, they played, let me find it here if I kept it in my notes or not. They played, all right, so Rock and Roll Tonight, NBC, I think that may be some of the...
NBC.
WNBC. I when I say it, it sounds like what you're saying. WNBC.
WNBC. Try it like that.
So, anyways, I think the Rock and Roll Tonight NBC is the one that's on YouTube that shows them during Dawn Patrol playing Play Rough and Penny. Eddie's coming out tonight. But the set list for that show, and not all those shows probably made it to air. You know, they play Night Ranger. They play Can't Find Me a Thrill. At Night She Sleeps, and it also lists that they played Sister Christian, which, you know, was written for Dawn Patrol, but they left it off the album. So, and there's a couple other instances, again, I can't, you know, verify it, but they were playing, you know, Sister Christian on the Dawn Patrol tour. So it's just one of those mysteries that, you know, if we ever had the guys, were able to, you know, yeah, we talked to the guys again, we'd, something I would ask them.
I've heard somewhere, Brent, maybe you can back me up or tell how it happened. I've always heard that they actually, Dawn Patrol and Midnight Madness were all written and recorded roughly at the same time, and right, they basically said, just hold some of these songs back for your second album. Because yeah, if you listen to the albums,
recorded so quickly.
Yeah, if you listen to the albums, they do have a very similar sound. I mean, the songs are all similar in their feel.
I've heard Sister Christian. I haven't heard the other songs. You know, I don't know about any of the others. I mean, if they were held back or not.
Well, when you were just talking about Ranger and that song Diary of a Madman, there's some lyrics, I believe, to...
Well, it's two lines from Touch of Madness, just two lyrics.
Yeah, Touch of Madness.
No music,
yeah.
No music, but...
No, just the lyrics.
But, you know, lifting two lines from an old song, you know, I don't know.
No, it's just neat to see where all that stuff comes from, you know, where yeah, bands go back and borrow.
I mean, yep. On that, I do know that I know they had to send Jack away at midnight on the Midnight Madness recording for a weekend or something to finish the lyrics. They sent him back to Arizona, wherever his family was from or something, to, you know, hey, we need these lyrics finished for this album. So I know they were writing stuff, but... And Kelly, I think, posted a picture of their demo for this record, and I think Sister Christian was on it. I don't think he showed the picture of the song titles, but I think he mentioned that Sister Christian was on that demo. Anything? I mean, I'm going to get into more of the singles and stuff, but like I said, the album hit 38.
Let me. I was telling Brent this, I think, off this camera here. I'm fascinated by how the guys go from the funk of Rubicon to the rock and melodic dual guitar slinging rock band that became Night Ranger. That is, I'd love to sit down with Jack Blades and just have a talk. Like, how did you go from that to that? Like, were you just a hired gun essentially in Rubicon who could slap at a bass?
Well, at that time, the music scene with Change and the British Invasion was really coming on. Then Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, all those bands.
But was there anything like Night Ranger?
Not to my knowledge.
I think
there's dual guitar pans.
Was Y&T out back then? Right, they were out.
Y&T is a totally.
Y&T's been out since 70s.
It's a different story. I mean, Y&T, you know, they're almost the godfathers of all this stuff.
That melodic sound.
In fact, Dave Menichetti was courted to play be Ozzy's new guitar player, from what I've heard from Dave Menichetti.
Ozzy wanted him to be this is around Jakey Lee time, I think. It wasn't right after Randy Rhoads, but but you know, Dave,
wasn't Mark Torian of Bullet Boys also auditioned for that?
That he did, but I guess he wasn't that good for at the time. I mean, Rudy.
If you ask Mark, he was the best.
And George Lynch, I believe, was one of them. And
but I don't think it's as sharp as turn as you think. You're going from Rubicon to Stereo to Night Ranger. And you know what? If you gave me a whole bunch of blow in 1978, I may like Rubicon a lot more. You know, it's a different time period. But you go for, I mean, and here's the thing is, I mean, we weren't on the scene in 1978. You know, that music was hip and cool. And then it goes to new wave. And that's what Stereo was. And so it's a progression, I think, more than anything. But I get what you're saying, where you go from Rubicon 1978 to 1982, you know, you got these dual guitars, but, you know.
But we don't really have any video or audio progression showing the steps from Rubicon to Stereo to Gamma to where we get to. We don't have any way to see the progression, do we?
There is nothing of Stereo out there. The only thing, and we discussed it on the page today, and I can't remember who brought it up. He posted a video clip of it. Young Girl in Love, Jack Blades, the Night Rangers playing that in Japan a couple years ago or something, and he talks about the song being a Stereo song. It was a song they had written while they were in Stereo, and it was like a new wave type sound, and they Night Rangered it up when they went to that band. So, it's definitely, you know, a big step from, you know, from 1974 Palms 150 to But really, I mean, if you think about it, you know, Fitz, he was playing straight up rock that whole time. So, you know, and I don't know much about the Jeff Watson band, but I'd assume they were probably doing the same as well. So, you know, that'd be something more that, you know, you would have to ask them, and they need to write books or something so we know all this stuff.
I know. We should do a documentary about them.
Have you guys seen the Y&T documentary?
No,
is it out?
It's out.
Yeah, I didn't know it was out yet.
You can order it from their website.
You guys, every band should do what they did. I mean, Y&T documentary, even if you're not a Y&T fan, rent it. Yeah, go to fucking Blockbuster.
Yeah.
There's one left. You know, there's still one left, I think, in Arizona.
I thought it was Alaska.
Somewhere.
But anyway.
I love documentaries. I watch them all the time.
Well,
I just saw it the other day on TV.
But, yeah, you can stream it now. I know they released it. I bought it on DVD. But anyways, it's great. Go get it. But every band should do it. And this is the time to do it, you know. You never know what the future holds. And what was great about Y&T is two of their founding members just passed away within the last couple of years, and they were able to get in-depth interviews with them each before they passed away. So it's just, you know, that stuff you can't replace. Any, I want to go into the singles for the album.
Unless
you guys got anything else. I mean, do we cover everything? We want to,
No, I only wish we had, and I know I'm going to put you on the spot, Brent. I don't remember the guy that, from Japan, who went to the actual satellite field to
get
the photo. I got to find that. I want to do that.
That's Yasui Uki, I believe his name is. I know I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, and if I am, I apologize.
Yeah, we don't have it in front of us, unfortunately. We're not set up that cool yet.
I want
but I want to give him a nod.
Oh, hey, into the dinosaurs in
And Sing Me Away.
I sent another video.
Isn't it like a Bon Jovi or somebody, something like that?
I can't remember. It's
Great White.
He's driving in the car, and it's in the background as he drives by. But you can see the dinosaurs and the eat sign. I don't know. I have to find it again. But
is it Henry Lee Summer?
No.
Was it a Flintstones video?
So
what's this?
I should have brought this up earlier. Rocking at the Hot Rock, whatever. It's like a compilation album from California, and I don't have a lot of information on it. But if you look at a band called Avalanche, and this is from, like I said, California, mixed, you know, in 1982. So it's, you know, it's right around that time, and, you know, San Francisco and all that. There's a band called Avalanche, and there's a guitarist named Jeff Watson.
Oh, wow.
I need to get a hold of Jeff and see, hey, is this you or some other Jeff Watson? But I don't know. So this is probably for Mark Greenway. He likes seeing all the weird stuff I have. This here is an acetate of Dawn Patrol.
Wow.
It's almost metal with a lacquer on it. And so what this is when a band wants to hear basically how does this sound on vinyl after they've, you know, recorded it, they can put this in a machine there and make a quick copy and then put it on, you know, take it home or whatever they want to do, put it in the studio, and they can actually hear what it sounds like on vinyl. And it's got two spindle holes for the recording process. You can only listen to it a few times before the sound really gets diminished on it. What's weird is there's only 8 songs on here.
How heavy is that?
You can feel a weight difference. It's metal.
Yeah.
It's like I said, it's like a metal plate. And
heavy metal.
Side A is Can't Find Me a Thrill, At Night She Sleeps, Sing Me Away, Eddie's Coming Out Tonight. Side B is Young Girl in Love, Play Rough, Penny, and Don't Tell Me You Love Me. Call My Name and Night Ranger are not on those albums, or is on that acetate. The mixes are the same, so sometimes, you know, you get those and you can find different mixes and stuff. Maybe At Night She Sleeps, sometimes I think I hear a little difference in it, but not enough to where I could actually say for sure. So that's just something kind of strange that I've come across in my collecting days.
Yeah. Call My Name is probably my most favorite Night Ranger song ever.
Well, eventually I think we'll do episodes where
we dig
into the songs.
I've been making a note of that, so when Brent asked me if I could name his favorite song, I'm like,
oh,
sure,
Andy,
can.
I've been telling you for years, Call My Name. I wish they would play Call My Name, and now they're playing it.
I got to see it. It was fantastic.
Oh, so great.
I'm trying to find that picture. That's why I'm looking down, in case anybody's wondering.
Well, if you go into the photos.
That's what I'm doing.
Okay, it's the first week we were up.
Yeah, I just have to scroll through them all. I'm not trying to look like I'm ignoring anybody.
Yeah, well, I was doing it on my laptop when Josh was talking, when I was looking for, you know, the Psalms album cut, you know, what I thought was a death sleeve.
What's so amazing about the page, guys, is just I love all the photos. I just love looking at everybody's photos. It's so cool.
And we're going to go deeper into the vinyl release, or every release. So sure. I'm just going to kind of highlight here. So if you hold up Night Ranger Dawn Patrol, and you gave that to me, I could tell you whether it was a first pressing of Boardwalk, a second pressing of Boardwalk. Boardwalk folds. MCA basically buys them up and then starts releasing the records under MCA. That's how they become on the label MCA. I could tell you if the record was printed all the way up to 86 or 87. So, Brent, ask me, how do you know if a Dawn Patrol is a first pressing?
I'm going to get his name up there because I can't say it. Is it readable?
No, not really.
Well, it looks like Yasuyuki.
Okay.
Anyway, that's awesome. trying to pull that way back. Had to go through 1,500 photos to find that.
I love that guy. I love him and all, you know, and everybody that posts from over there. They're fantastic. Everybody's fantastic. Everybody does a great job on the page.
Yeah. So sorry to take that off.
Anyway, Josh. Hey, Josh, there's an album called Dawn Patrol.
I believe
there's like 8 different pressings. How can you tell between the first two?
There you go, Brent. So,
inquiring minds want to know.
The first thing you need to make, you make sure you got a Boardwalk copy. And there's different.
So are they all on Boardwalk or no?
No, that's how you can tell, you know.
And I'm not
there's
playing
the Boardwalk
dumb.
Logo
I really don't know.
Right there in the middle.
There are, and I'm just going to talk about USA versions. You have probably 4 different USA versions of Boardwalk. And that's not counting promos. You know, you're going to have promos for them. But the first thing you want...
The shirt is really soft.
The first thing
you
want to look at is the very first pressing. Well, actually, I'll show you what the second pressing is. It's easier to show what is actually there.
Yeah, I can show you the second pressing because, see, folks, what happened was when I started record collecting and Boardwalk folded, I took my copy back to Meyer in 1983 because I had a sealed copy of Boardwalk. So I've had a sealed copy since 1983 of Boardwalk, and then I meet Josh, and Josh goes, oh, that's a second pressing.
No.
I'm like, how do you know? And Josh is gonna.
Why?
Hold on,
let me see what you got. So.
Because Josh
take it to your right.
Take it back a little
right,
bit. You're getting a glare.
Right there. If you guys look next to the circle, pull it up a little bit. You see Bruce Cohn Management.
Yeah.
A little logo right there. It looks like the first and last name with a little like tree growing in between it. That is a second pressing.
Sealed.
All right. And sealed. But yours doesn't have the hype sticker.
Doesn't have the hype sticker. No, it doesn't.
All right.
And I remember I gave that up. I never took the shrink wrap off the original one I had. But when I took it back, I should have removed the shrink wrap because I would have saved the hype sticker.
So if you look at that, there is no Bruce Cohn Management. So this would be a first pressing. Just because every other copy afterwards has Bruce Cohn Management on there. So you have those, you know, pressings of the first album. Then you have RCA pressing, and you have Columbia House pressing. RCA. Oh, there's also, you know, we get really deep into it. Some of the second pressings don't have Alan Zint's mastering in the Dead Wax, FYI. And what that is, long story short...
Explain to them what the Dead Wax means.
Dead Wax is the part of a record, usually, you know, right near the spindle, where there's no, you know, where the needle would stop, and it's just no songs are there. That's the Dead Wax.
Your nerd is showing.
So, what do I got here? Oh, the RCA Club. So RCA, you're going to see a big old, all that white writing above the band's names.
Yeah, manufactured RCA Music Services under license and blah, blah, blah.
So that is an RCA version?
That was a record club for all you younger people out there that you'd send in, you'd get 10 albums for a penny.
Yeah, I think I still owe them money.
Yeah, and they'd ship you these 10 albums, and you had to buy another 6. And, you know, the difference was that an album at that time would have cost you $5.99 in the store. They would cost $12.99 plus shipping through the record club. So basically they made all their money back on the 6 that you had, 6 or 12 that you had to buy. But most people just...
And then they would do their own pressings, right?
Yeah.
RCA eventually becomes BMG. In the late 80s.
That's who I owe money
and
to.
Columbia House was the big one, you know, initially.
I owe them money, too. I never got all my albums.
So, 1983, you then get Dawn Patrol with MCA Records. MCA always has that rainbow label. on the back. And it's going to say MCA on the back. And if you look, the Bruce Cohn management is gone, the logo, but it is in, you can see the print
right there. Under where it says.
And it's in different font. So they basically just added it to the record. But MCA's always got that that rainbow label there.
So, Josh, I noticed on that back cover there, I saw Sammy Hagar's name. What's he doing on that album?
Yeah, they just thank him. They thank him. What was it, Gary?
For being awesome.
Gary Peel. They thank Ozzy and Sharon, Bill Graham, all those guys that basically helped him.
Sharon! What?
See, I'm looking at you right now on the screen, Andy, shaking my head. Just looking at you. I'm going to look back at Josh now.
That
CRC.
That's a Columbia House Records pressing.
Columbia Record Club is what that would stand for, but it's Columbia House to you and I. Some of those, have you ever found one of those with a sticker on it instead of the printing of the Columbia?
Yes, but they didn't, as far as I know, they did not do that until later on. And reason why is there's enough demand for vinyl at this time for them to make their own pressings. When they get to about Man in Motion, there's no demand. So basically, MCA just ships them standard copies, and Columbia House just slaps a sticker on it. So okay. Greatest Hits and Man in Motion is where they start getting the stickers at. Could it be a little bit earlier? Possible, but I've never seen one.
I need a better chair.
And then
I can't feel my left leg.
What's crazy is there's a demand out there. We'll get into these labels a little bit later, but MCA switches labels. They use a Camel label. Late 85, 86. They're using it all the time by 87. But sometime in late 85, 86, they start using.
There you go.
Oh, cool. I've never seen that, I don't think.
Camel
label.
So somewhere in 1985, 86, they decide they're going to repress Dawn Patrol on vinyl. And
especially priced, too.
$6.98.
That's right. So you get yours today.
So you get... like I said, if you have a Dawn Patrol record, it could be from any of the year, depending on different clues. And like I said, I don't want to go in too much, but Dawn Patrol...
Oh, you've already fallen down the well there, Timmy.
Epic. Yep.
What country is that from?
This would be England. Oh, I skipped.
Cheerio.
I skipped some of the other countries. Korea. And then you got...
our friends from Japan. Now, do we know what that's called in Japan? Like, the Kiss series are all called something from hell. Is that called something other than Dawn Patrol? Do we know? Japan? Are Japan fans out there? Fans of Motion? Let us know what this series is called, if they have a series for Night Ranger like they had. What were the Hell series called? I don't recall.
I think some of the other ones may be part of a series. But this is not, because it's Boardwalk Records. And it was that was the only one
in Japan.
That was the only one they ever released. Japan is then become CBS Sony in Japan, and then eventually MCA takes it over. So, and there's other variations. There's England, and I showed England, but there's other countries as well. There is this. This is a promo from Japan. It's Modern Rock Action, and it's basically a record that they throw on a few songs from different bands, basically to get that music out there. So it is a promo, and on this it has Don't Tell Me You Love Me and Sing Me Away. And it does have all the bands on the back, and you can see.
You know, yeah, that's a great picture.
Guys on there. So those were the records. Night Ranger releases three singles from Dawn Patrol. Can you tell me which three?
Andy, start with the first one.
Don't Tell Me You Love Me.
I won't. Sing Me Away.
Correct.
And you going to do it or you want me to do it?
Is it Penny?
It's about a girl, about a young girl, I believe.
Young girl in love.
And she's in love, yeah.
Not released.
What do you folks get a load of this one?
Oh, wait, yes. There's something a little disturbing about this.
Well, I'll go with the 12-inch. I don't know if there's a 12-inch copy of Sing Me Away or Don't Tell Me You Love Me. I don't own it, so, you know, that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. But this is a 12-inch DJ copy for Young Girl in Love, and I just dropped video feed for someone. All right, we're good. We're good. It's
okay.
Well, I lost Brent. You're back. You're back, unfortunately.
You, hey!
Everybody watching's, you know.
That was one of your seven wishes. I know it. I'm back.
So.
I'm such a dork.
Oh, I don't know what's going on. It's going.
Is it still there?
Hold on.
Put another Anybody, token.
Can you hear me?
Put another Fenny's. Put another Fenny's token in there, would you?
Ooh. Hello. I can see you.
No, you're fine. It's on my recording. It's on my recording, and I get you, then it falls off.
This is why we have to come to the pre-production meetings.
Right now, everything's good.
Okay, hi, everybody.
I mean, the good thing is it's Brent.
Welcome to episode one.
It's Brent falling
start
off.
Over?
Yeah, it's only me.
So here are your singles for Don't Tell Me You Love Me. There's a U.S., you know, promo version, and then, you know, the commercial version. No, there's no picture sleeve for the U.S. version, just Boardwalk sleeve. Then, and there's different variations of these. You know, this one has taken from the LP Boardwalk, Dawn Patrol, which none of the others have. So, again, I got four different versions of what you could have went and bought in the store. And then you have the England version, the German version.
Fits turned sideways.
I like
it's beautiful.
That.
And the Japanese is about the same. My custom label is covering up some of the.
It's so punk rock looking for Fitz, you know, like Devo, something Devo would do.
Yeah,
it's great.
Well, I got one. I'll show you on the Midnight Madness. Like Fitz looks like he's going to kick your ass in. You know?
Really?
And he's wearing scrubs too. It's like I've never thought he could like mean mug with
scrubs. I think I know
scrubs.
What you're talking about.
He's going to kick your ass and then heal your wounds.
And what's crazy with like Fitz is. You know, I mean, I think when we were all younger, it's like, who do you want to be a Night Ranger? Well, it's not, you never picked Fitz, right? But like, if you had to, okay, you got to go out in public, not on Halloween or nothing, just a regular day, and you hand someone a Night Ranger album, especially from the, you know, early to mid 80s, you got to dress like one of these guys. You're pretty much going with Fitz, you know, you're not going to the grocery store in your Bumblebee outfit. You know, you're not, you know, you might go with the blue blazer.
Brent's going with Jack. I know that.
You know, I might just go with the red sweater and the black hat. You know, Fitz was a little bit ahead of his time, even with the scrubs. But the second single was Sing Me Away. You got a promo with mono, and then you got promos with stereo. You got promos with small font and large font, all that good stuff. But it's all no picture sleeves in the U.S. It's just Boardwalk labels. Here's actually one with the actual correct sleeve. And then in Germany, you had the back album cover as the cover.
Nice, I like that.
And this is why I like 45s, is they always use kind of different photos. You have the Japanese. And I think a girl on the page had asked if, hey, does anybody have this picture in color? And I was like, well, I don't have that exact picture, but I do have the...
Yeah, I remember that conversation.
And then you have Young Girl in Love was the third single. I don't think it was actually ever released commercially, though. I think it was only released to radio stations. So you have a DJ, this promo, Young Girl in Love. This is a mono, Young Girl in Love. And then this is, it was never released in Japan either. It was just released in Germany.
That's cool.
And it's a promo as well. And then this is probably, this is what you, I think you alluded to earlier. One of those weird things that I saw, I don't know, I think it was on eBay. It was a Young Girl in Love 45, which I had. I wasn't too much interested in it. But it had this promo sheet with it. And I'm looking at it, and I didn't buy it. I mean, it sat there. It was relisted a couple times, and finally I just bought it for, whatever, $5 or $6. And because I was just like, who the hell would design this? And I get it, and it's on Boardwalk letterhead. So here's the letterhead right there. And it's on thick, you know, professional paper. And it says, Young Girl in Love, the new single from the Dawn Patrol LP by Night Ranger. And you can, and no one's forging this just to sell it for $5. You know, this is just something that they threw in this sleeve probably when it was being promoted. So that's the gist of it. But what's weird is...
Great picture of the band. And here she comes.
And there it is. That is definitely a young girl.
8 or 9? I don't know.
I don't want to think about that. But Brent and I have daughters.
And I don't know. I just, you know, it was like, I think that's...
It's weird.
Half the reason why I didn't buy it, but at first, but yeah, I mean, it's not... I mean, someone's not getting Boardwalk, you know, stationary and just forging that. So this is something I don't know, you know, when, you know, what was the story behind it. I've never seen it anywhere else either. That's one thing I've learned is if you've never seen it and it's out there, you buy it. Oh, can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Some other crap before I... Rubicon 8-track.
Nice.
Stop bragging.
There is, like, if I shake it, there's still cocaine that falls out.
Oh, Lord.
Cal Jam 2 8-track. And
wow.
I think I showed the long box for the Dawn Patrol, the price value one, but I found this the other day, too.
Yeah, so, and that's what this original CD is, yeah, with the original back to it.
So
nice.
I don't have a copy of the special price CD.
And Brent, do you want to tell them why CDs came in these?
Well, back in the day when you had records are 12 inches tall, and the stores couldn't equip the CDs, and cassettes too. Cassettes would be in long...
Yeah, plastic.
You know, security holders, basically, and they'd stick up. Well, those were just the record slots is what they were. They just put those in the record slots. And so when the format of the CD came out, all the CDs were in trays initially, and then the long boxes finally started coming out. I think CBS Sony was the first one to start doing it with, like, Bruce Springsteen and what have you. And then everybody started jumping on it. And I used to have a ton of these things. I found some in the garage the other day, and, you know, it's great. I remember Mercury Polygram always put out blister packs, is what they were called. They were the plastic packs, and if you wanted to get it out real quick, you put the key through the hole where they wanted to peg it and try to slice that sucker open. Nobody was stealing that, but Kiss never had a long box until Revenge, 1992. But they would put a piece of... What would happen is they'd put two CD books in, and it used to make me mad because I didn't want to buy it to get two CD books. I wanted a long box like Night Ranger had.
Did you?
So there you go. You had to get me on it, and, you know.
Yeah, I took my.
Goes back to my.
I took my.
I'm monk in my OCD.
I took my headphones off. Did you talk about the reason why?